Toyota salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live from the Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. Party gets started tonight. Launch party 7 to 10, silent auction at 8. Get on out there tomorrow. Get your tickets at wildwestbrewfest.com. You can also pre-purchase drink tickets. I don't feel like there should be a hyphen there. There will be over 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, and live music. I don't think there should be.
I'm not even looking at the copy. It's just like
we
hung up on a guy for correcting things like that before.
Yeah, that was kind of hypocritical of me, I'll admit. I've learned since we hung up on MLA Paul for grammar that I am also very critical.
You're a kindred spirit to MLA Paul.
Yeah, I've learned that about myself over the last month or so. And I think we lost MLA Paul. MLA Paul, please come back. I've learned we're a lot more similar than we are disalike. Maryland's currently leading the defending national champion in women's college basketball, by the way. If you want to hurry to a TV, Maryland with a 3-point lead.
South Carolina?
Early third quarter. Look at you showing off. That's a flex. Look at that flex.
No, it was purely
dropping knowledge.
I just know they're really good, and they won a couple natties under Don Staley. That's all I knew.
Yeah, Maryland leads South Carolina.
Look at me. I dropped the coach's thing, too. Look at that.
8-10 left to go in the third. You should go ahead and race to your TV. South Carolina, number two team in the country. They're losing right now. There's still plenty of time. Still 18 minutes left to play here, but maybe worth your attention. 713-780-ESPN. Why are we knocking Cam for doing something so fundamental? Laughing emoji. We're not knocking Cam. We're just observing Cam.
It's just funny.
And there's also no one else is doing that. There's no one, maybe in Little League, maybe even like in high school ball. There's not even college baseball players that will do this. You are not sprinting from regular right field and backing up a routine fly ball to center that's 380 feet to dead center field. Not happening. Most corner outfielders are already running back to the dugout, quite frankly. And Cam Smith's going to be doing that in a couple of weeks. He was just very, very excited. And I'm not knocking him for being excited. It was just kind of funny. Desert Stroh says Cam Smith had child on Christmas Day energy. I agree. He did. He was acting like a child on Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to say he was all hopped up on Mountain Dew, but yeah.
Yeah. A kid in a candy store is what Cam Smith was like yesterday at Daikin Park. Best rookie. Okay. All right. 713-780-ESPN. Cam Smith is the most exciting Astros rookie since 713-780-3776. For me, it's Carlos Correa, Brian. I go Correa over Springer because the Astros were in a better state. Like, they were actually like a contending team. They were a team we had more hope for. When Springer was called up, it was like, okay, well, he's one player on this perennial 100-game loser. And it was exciting because it's like, okay, well, we're going to have a good player at least, as opposed to running out like Rick Ankiel and LJ Hose and Robbie Grossman. Like, it's fun to have a real guy who could actually be decent. So, like, that, we're splitting hairs here. Like, obviously, we were excited for all of these guys. But I have to go Correa more than Springer because of where the Astros as a team were at the times of their debuts.
I get that. And help me out with the timeline, because I know Springer was like, what, late April, early May of 2014. When did Correa come up? Beginning of 2015? I'm trying to remember the timeline.
I think he came up early in 2015.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So
I think they were good whenever they called him up. Like, they were winning games. And it's like, oh, okay, could this be a team that actually does some stuff?
Yeah, and Correa, to back your point, Correa would have been my second choice. Like, he was second on the list, not only for the reasons you mentioned, because obviously the Astros were better then. They had made the step the year before from a 100-loss team to a team that won, like, 20 more games in 2014. And obviously, at the end of that season, they made their first playoff trip since 2005 in a decade. So I think that excitement adds to Correa's point. I think also on the Correa side, if I'm making the case for him, he was the number one overall pick of all these guys that were part of the dynastic run that Jeff Luhnow drafted. He was the only guy that was the number one overall pick. So naturally, there's more excitement for a guy like that than there is someone drafted later.
And Springer was 11, so he wasn't that far down. And then you had Bregman that was drafted second.
Yeah.
So Bregman was pretty exciting when he came up too. Tucker was exciting too, but didn't really. I mean, we're not talking about how they performed. We're talking about when they were called up.
Okay, yeah, because Tucker obviously, yeah, you're right. It's only when they're called up, because Tucker was up and down, I think, a couple times. So it wasn't stick and stay like it was with some of the other guys. But yeah, if you're talking about only the moment when they, I would still put Tucker a little further down. Since the Astros were, it's not like you had to have it was different than I think the other guys, because they were still really adding to the team more so than they were when Tucker was there, if that makes sense. Because since that run had already started, it already won a World Series, but it was exciting still.
Phil Nevin, laughing face emoji, says a texter.
Former first overall pick.
Wasn't Pena a rookie when he won MVP, et cetera? Yeah, he was a rookie when he won the World Series, ALCS, MVPs. But people weren't over the moon about Jeremy Pena's debut. A lot of people actually wanted a veteran free agent. They were unhappy that Correa was playing somewhere else. Secondly, if it wasn't Correa, they didn't want to hand the job to a rookie who hadn't done a ton in the minors. He was pretty quick for him to take over. So there wasn't a ton of excitement about Jeremy Pena taking over at shortstop as a rookie for his debut. He's not in this conversation. He's not in the conversation with Springer, with Correa, with Bregman. Are we sleeping on Yordan?
Yeah.
Because Yordan was crushing the ball in the minors, and it's okay, this guy's exciting.
Right.
This guy's got a chance, and again, it doesn't matter what they did in their rookie year, but there was some buzz with Yordan, too.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. He's still post-first World Series run, which changes things for me a little bit. I think the excitement was more for, the path to get to, kind of the chase, to get to that first World Series. To me, that chase for the first one's always a little bit more exciting, so that's kind of why I regard guys like Correa, Bregman, and Springer maybe a little bit more exciting, but it is a good call. Yordan was obviously very exciting, very quickly came up and made an impact.
Where would you put Smith in our exciting scale with the guys that we're talking about?
Honestly, I'd put him above Tucker, I think.
Okay.
But
yeah, I would too.
I don't think he's ahead of anyone else we've mentioned. I would have Correa, Springer, I'd have Bregman, and I think I'd have Yordan ahead of him. So
I would too.
I guess I would put him ahead of Tucker. If we're going to include pitchers in this, I would have him ahead of Lance. I think that's probably where he would be. He'd be above Pena, because I agree with you. Pena's not in this conversation. I don't think he'd be ahead of the core guys from that first World Series run.
I think I would have him fifth as well. I think my list would be the same as yours. Kind of off on topic. I remember Roy Oswalt's debut. I loved whenever they called up Roy.
Call.
It was on National Fox too. It was on Big Boy Fox, and he was good. Texter says since Correa, I'd say Yordan, but Correa came up right at the beginning of the dynasty. So it's kind of your point that you were making, Brian. Texter 91 Bagwell. So you didn't get excited over Correa, Springer, Bregman, Tucker, Yordan? 91 Bagwell. Huh. Brandon T, most exciting.
I was young. I don't really remember that well.
Yeah, I don't think I remember obviously who Bagwell was at a young age.
I remember it because a very, very young Brian has a picture with Jeff Bagwell when he came to my local bank. It's actually kind of an embarrassing photo. So I remember that time when he was a rookie, but I was still pretty young, so I don't.
Why is
it
embarrassing?
Really because I had decided as I think a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, that I no longer wanted bangs, and I did my own haircut where I just cut off all my bangs, but obviously without the skill of an actual barber, cut only that off. And like I said, my mom was about to take me to go meet Jeff Bagwell. He was at our credit union near Park, a mile away from our house. And so my photo sitting on Jeff Bagwell's lap as like a six-year-old is of me with no bangs because I cut my hair straight across.
Oh, man. What were you doing before? You had the bangs with no hair?
I don't remember. I mean, like,
you're going the Jinko Jean look or what?
I think I had kind of a bowl. I think I had kind of a bowl haircut. I don't remember, but I just remember I had decided that I didn't want bangs, and so I just took a pair of scissors that I found in the house and cut them off, and that's what my haircut looks like when I'm sitting with Jeff Bagwell, rookie sensation.
Brandon T, most exciting rookie since Carlos Correa for me. He was my favorite player. Correa was my favorite player, too. Texter, either Correa or Yordan. Correa was highly anticipated because he was a specimen that resembled A-Rod. Yordan came up and raked immediately. Yeah, but we're not talking post-debut. We're talking at the moment they debuted.
Haven't brought up Hunter Pence in this conversation.
Yeah.
I know he came kind of at the end of a run where the team was starting to tear everything down, and then he and Bourne get traded away before they obviously hit their prime. But I remember being pretty excited for Hunter Pence.
Pence was pretty high up there.
Long.
Yeah, Pence was high.
His rookie season, man. I think you brought up the stat the other day, like what his batting average was his rookie year. Obviously, he wouldn't go on to be as high of a batting average guy further into his career. But, man, he was really exciting when he came up. I think maybe in part because he ran a little awkwardly. He threw a little awkwardly. He was just different than, you know, every other baseball player you'd seen. He's running through glass doors at spring training. He was a wild guy.
Yeah, he was wild. He played so goofy. He was very unorthodox. Has Forrest Whitley ever made his debut? He did. He made his debut last year. Texture, I remember getting excited about Wandy Rodriguez's debut. I think it was in Wrigley.
Eh.
I don't remember Wandy's debut, but I remember when Jose Urquidy got like a spot start and like no one knew who he was. I was working at the previous radio life. I was working at the Highway to Hell. And I remember whenever he got called up for that spot start, and like no one knew who he was, and no one knew how to say his name. It was like, Urquidy?
Yeah.
Like there's so many,
kitty,
there were
kitty,
so
kitty?
Many
yeah.
botchings of his name, and I'm sure I contributed to that. But yes, so many people were botching his name back then. He might have made
that.
We might have been together when he made his debut.
See, he was in the – okay, so that's the 2019 World – well, he was in the 2019 World Series. I don't think the – you know what? Actually, I think you're right. I was just about to say it would have been hilarious to hear the Baytown Batty try to pronounce Urquidy before he knew how to say it.
He made his debut in 2019.
Right.
2019, he made his debut.
Because I couldn't remember if that was his rookie year or not, but obviously my early lasting memory of Urquidy – was obviously the 2019 World Series when we were on the road, I believe, in Game 3 and shoved when the Astros had their backs against the wall down 2-0 and obviously didn't work out at the end. Zach Greinke should have been taken out. But, yeah, that was definitely a fun moment as well.
Yeah, Tim Reddit was a big one at the time. He said Reddit.
I loved Tim Redding.
Yeah. I loved Tim Redding. I loved Wade Miller. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
they
Wade
were on that
Miller.
Rose.
It was not as popular as O's Bros or the Wizard of O's or whatever it was, that fan group out in right field, but me and some buddies started a group for Wade Miller. We got a shout-out from Milo once, but definitely didn't catch on as much.
I was stoked for Berkman. That's a good call. Berkman was pretty – because he
Berkman
went to Rice
fun.
Locally, was,
right.
like, crushing into the minors. Texter, Charlie Polillo made it his mission for Springer to be called up. I remember that.
He also did Altuve.
I never understood
that. Remember that?
I never understood why Polillo was pro call them up. Like, give me the good year on the back end whenever the team's really good, as opposed to the year on the front end when the team's really bad. Like the Springer, the people that wanted Springer to get up so quickly, why? But just so you could selfishly watch them. It is not in the best interest of the team. Like Springer would have been gone. Springer would not have played in the Astros ALCS in 2020 had they called him up sooner, had they called him up when everybody wanted him to call up. Like, would you rather do you want Springer on a 100-loss team or do you want Springer on an ALCS team? Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And I think what you mentioned, and this came up in the conversations we've had before, like I can't remember exactly the context, but I think it matters, you know, how good the team is. I mean, you're right. In 2014, or like I guess we came up in 2014, so let's say 2013, they're losing 100 games. So what are you spending a year of a team control on when you're losing, you know, 100 games? I'm 100% with you that, like, in the Cam Smith case is different, because this is a team that's obviously won the division a billion years in a row and has a chance to do it again and go deep in the playoffs possibly if everything's go right. So it makes sense to be aggressive with service time now, but when you're losing 100 games, I mean, it feels like a waste.
Alex says Adam Everett. 75 says no. Jimmy Wynn. Nah. B. Hannon says Ramon Castro.
Ramon Castro.
713-780. I did love Everett. I was a huge Adam Everett fan. I'm not being facetious. I liked him a lot. He was so good defensively.
That was always an argument point with me and some of my buddies, because I had a buddy who was like you, who just was goo goo gaga over his defense. But man, that I think it was because of the rest of the lineup around him. But when you had the Everett Osmus pitcher spot, it just that was a thorn in my side, that Adam Everett coming up at the bottom of the order.
I remember they tried to bat him second one year. I can't remember the manager.
Yeah.
It was like they were like Biggio get on and then bunt him over. Like, that was the strategy. It was like, hey, Biggio get on base and then we're gonna bunt you over with Adam Everett. I think it might have been. Yeah. I don't know why you called him Jimmy. Is that a pet name you have for him?
Well, I think that was a Matt Jackson thing, going back to old.
He did older, spell his name with radio. One M. He spelled his name.
Yeah,
he did spell Jimmy with one M. That's why he called him Jimmy.
I think that was a Matt and Adam thing, because they couldn't stand that he would always answer every question with a manager's decision. And so to mock him, they would call him Jimmy.
Jimmy. That's funny. Loperfido, Singleton. Come on. Loperfido.
Yeah.
Loperfido, if this is a sense conversation, he's the only answer, with him ranking in the minors at Abreu struggling so bad. Everyone was banging the table hard for Joey to get called up. You're right that they were banging the table hard, but this is the most exciting Astros rookie since?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it kind of disqualifies Loperfido.
Sean actually predicted during the break that someone was going to say Loperfido, and I laughed at it, but prediction came true.
There are a few people saying Loperfido. J.D. Martinez was exciting at the time. Yeah, Luno's second worst move. Texter says Carlos Lee. He did make his debut with the Astros. I do remember Bob Ford, like, he would pronounce Carlos Lee's name, Carlos Lee. I didn't think this, but it sounded, by the way he said it, that Carr was his first name and Losley was his second, was his last name. Like, that's how he said it. It was like, now batting, Carr Losley. It was just funny.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was.
That's funny.
I would get a kick out of it. Mine was Bergman at the card show. Met him when my wife was handling the pins and memorabilia. Son's now 31. Got pictures with him. He was so cool. So I was really, really excited when he got called up. Yeah, I've always heard good things about Bergman. He's kind of a good dude. Miguel Tejada
says
good
on the radio with John and Lance.
That's right. Tejada. He was. Tejada didn't make his debut at the Astros.
No, I think maybe the joke is he got 3 years older once he got to the Astros. I don't know if that's the joke, but
Bagwell blew the roof off the Astrodome. Did he in 91?
Was anybody blowing the roof off the Astros in 91?
Like, the Astros weren't good in 91. Were people blowing the roof off the Astrodome in 1991?
I don't know. I wish someone would blow the roof off the Astrodome, but that's another conversation.
What do you have against the Astrodome?
I just think it should be something else. We're not using it. It's just a home for, you know, dog-sized rats in asbestos at the moment.
Yeah, they do need to do something with it. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How long is the leash on some of these Astro question marks? Like, how long is the leash on Jake Meyers? How long is the leash on Altuve playing left? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brewfest in Katy.
Yes, sir. Tickets available, wildwestbrewfest.com. You can also purchase pre-purchase drink tickets. Over 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, live music. It's a great time. Launch party tonight, 7 to 10. Silent auction at 8 o'clock. as well. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blaine, J-Bone, do you toss and turn in your sleep in the hotel? That bed looks tossed like you went from side to side multiple times. Anxiety for tonight. Yeah, if you're watching on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. If you're watching on YouTube at ESPN Houston, if you're watching on Twitter at ESPN975, I am doing today's show from my hotel room. And my bed is in the back. I didn't make my bed today. And I usually don't have the cleaners come in.
Yeah, why would you?
Have the cleaners come in?
No. Like if you're staying in a hotel room, like, yeah, why would you make your bed? If you're there for, a long stay, I guess that's different. But
some people believe that you should make your bed every day.
I know. I hear people say that. I don't get it. Their reasoning is always like, oh, start your day with accomplishing something. It's like you're folding a bed. Is that really an accomplishment that gets your day started well?
It's good for the military. You're better than the military?
No, but I was not military material, so maybe that's further reasoning, but I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not a big bed maker. My
wife
will
make it. Occasionally, but...
Yeah, I don't like making my bed. I'm just not a fan. You have to untuck it all the time, all that stuff. My wife will do it, though. She'll make it. She'll usually make it. She usually does it every day, actually. I wouldn't. I would never do it. But do I turn side to side? I do. I'm a side sleeper, and I will go back and forth depending. I don't sleep on my belly. I don't sleep on my back. I sleep on my sides and either side. I can do either side. How do you sleep?
Do you get pretty anxious before games? I'm sure it's different regular season to tournament, but obviously we're about what? We're 3.5 hours from tip. I mean, when does the anxiety tick up for you? When you get to the arena?
Probably closer to airtime, I would guess. Yeah. Not in the regular season at all. Postseason, I'm a bit like, it's more nervous energy, like, hey, I'm ready to go. Now, it helps whenever we have a show. Like, it's not as bad on weekdays because you have a show to prepare for, you have a show to do. So, you usually don't even have time.
Yeah,
you usually don't have time to get, like, anxious, nervous on a weekday. But, like, a weekend, and if we're playing at night, it's like, okay, I got all day to, like, think about it.
It kind of does suck that it's the night. It's the last game with the last tip off of the night tonight.
It's at 10:09 Eastern time.
Yeah,
but because I had the show and all that, it didn't bother me. If it was a Saturday Sunday at 10:00, like that would be torture for me. But because we had the show and stuff, it's kind of like another day. And it's more anxious like from a fandom point of view. Like it's not from like a broadcast point of view. But, no, I don't think I was anxious last night. A texter, he was Rookie of the Year. He's talking about Bagwell. Yeah, but we're not talking about their rookie season. We're talking about the point of their debut. What was the level of excitement? And I'm not saying that it wasn't very high for Bagwell, but was it higher for Bagwell than Springer, Correa, Bregman, Jordan, and now Cam Smith? Like, it has nothing to do with their rookie years. It has nothing to do with them as a player. It has everything to do with the buzz surrounding their debut.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's tough for us to say because, as kids born in the 80s, we don't really remember the way Bagwell's debut like we would, these guys that came up in the 2010s, but I'm sure it was very exciting. Bagwell was not like a complete unknown. It's not like he was a guy that came out of nowhere after the trade that brought him here from the Red Sox, but I just don't remember it well enough to say how excited I was. So for me personally, the excitement level was more so with those guys that came up in 2014 and after.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the Alicias of some of these players. 713-780-3776. How long is the leash on Cam Smith?
I think it's pretty long. And part of this obviously depends on how the team is playing, what the options are behind them. And I think that's the biggest part. I mean, the options behind them, Chaz, and maybe it's Gamble. Like, I don't see as we spent, our offseason.
Gamble's gone, man.
Well, even furthering the point. But we spent the offseason, talking kind of hand-wringing, like, oh, my God, this is going to be the worst outfield in baseball, blah, blah, blah. So if the options behind him are the best or the worst worst outfield in baseball, I don't see how there would be a rush or a short leash to pull him from the lineup. So I think it's into the summer at least, maybe even All-Star break, but obviously that is dependent upon how the Astros' record's looking and where they stand in the division.
I think it's a very long leash. Like, I don't think that you can make this type of move and not give him a very long runway. Like, I think it's incredibly long. I think he's going to get multiple months. Like, even if it's worst-case scenario, which no one's predicting it's going to be that, no one's wishing for it to be that, but even if it's worst-case scenario, I think they give him 3 months.
Yeah, I can't see them possibly making this move before July. Or, you know, like mid-June to July. But I think it's really – unless this is a case where the season gets to a point like it did last year where they're 10 games behind the Mariners or the Rangers or whatever, maybe that causes a desperation if in addition to that he's, you know, really, really struggling. But, you know, outside of something extreme like that, I think we're talking All-Star break before they even start to consider it.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. How long's the leash on? Let's combine these two because they might kind of be in the same conversation. Jake Meyers, Chaz McCormick.
I think it's pretty long for Jake because they don't really have any other center field options that excite you, and he's a plus defensive player, so I think that plays into the equation at probably, what would you say, the second most important defensive position behind shortstop. So
top
I
three,
think
maybe
is,
catcher. Yeah, it kind of depends on your belief.
I guess
top three for sure.
Yeah, so he's a plus player at worst, the top three most important defensive position. And it's not like you have, even if Jacob Melton really impressed in AAA, I don't see him being a center fielder once he comes to the pros. At least to me, he profiles more as a corner outfielder. So I don't think there's really anyone pushing Jake. So as long as Jake doesn't bottom out, I think he's going to get the whole. I think he's probably going to get the whole season. Combining with that, in the caveat to that being, unless Chaz gets back to 2022 Chaz or 2023 Chaz, that is, if Chaz were to get back to 2023 Chaz, then I think the Astros can make a switch with Jake. But then combining that with Chaz, I think the leash on Chaz could be kind of short because 2023 was awful, or I'm sorry, 2024 he was awful last year. Spring didn't start off to, or didn't do well in spring either. So, and now he's been replaced by Cam. So now I don't know what their option would be to replace him as a depth piece in the outfield. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe he does have a little bit longer, but I don't know. He's not a guy that was obviously a high draft pick. He's not a guy that they paid a lot of money to, so they don't really have the commitment to them. So if they have an option, if Jacob Melton starts hitting in AAA, I think he could be out of here before the end of May.
Interesting. Yeah, I think Chaz is going to be with the team the entire year. I think he's a reserve outfielder on this team, gives them center field flexibility. Can contend with Jake for center field reps, depending on Jake's bat, like you mentioned. So I'm going to give both of them a long leash. Like, I don't think Jake's going anywhere.
I think you would agree that Jake's probably longer than Chaz. I mean, you're right with depth, you know, at center field behind Jake. That's obviously important.
I just think their roles are so differently.
They are. I just see the options. Like, if we're talking about what's behind them, like who could push them to take their job, I see more viable options behind Chaz as far as Jacob Melton than I do behind Jake. So I would say shorter leash for Chaz, but I get your point.
I think Meyers is a long leash unless he strikes out against a position player. Oh, never mind. Yeah, that was embarrassing. But Meyers had two knocks yesterday in an RBI. Get off his back, Texter.
Yeah, the Astros admin made him the offensive player of the game.
Jake from Rake Farm. He was the only Astro with multi-hits.
Yep.
Only one in that game yesterday. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How long is the leash at second? How long is the leash at Altuve in left? Wesneski, middle relief. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees from the Wild West Brewfest in Katy on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's March. It's a couple more days of March, though. Spring is here, and it's time for spring savings at Monument Chevrolet. Get over to the dealership this weekend. Why not? Get over there. 225 Beltway 8. Check out their massive inventory. You can't miss it off 225 and Beltway 8. They're plot of land is massive. I think it's bigger than some suburbs. But get on out there to Monument Chevrolet. They are the dealer you can trust. They're transparent with you. No hassle pricing. Get your car shopping done fast as well. It's always aggravating when you're looking for a new car. You don't know who you can trust. You don't know if they're lying to you. You don't know what the price is real. It's just, it's stressful. And you don't have to worry about that at Monument Chevrolet because of their transparency. They've been serving the Houston area for 50 years. They've helped generations of families get their new vehicles. And these families keep coming back because of that transparency, because of the no-hassle pricing, because you can trust them, which is hard to find with a car dealer. But they have that at Monument Chevrolet. Family feel, friendly atmosphere. They hire good people. It leads to a great culture. Monument Chevrolet is cutting prices across their inventory right now. And with tax season coming up, Monument Chevrolet can put your reimbursement money to work with the right vehicle for you. Get a fair deal, a fast deal, an easy deal without wasting your time in these aggravating, stressful negotiations. No tricks. No time wasting. They're not going to hide charges on you. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com, or visit them in person, 225 and Beltway 8 at Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brewfest in Katy.
Wild West Brewfest tomorrow. Get your tickets, wildwestbrewfest.com. You can also pre-purchase drink tickets at wildwestbrewfest.com. 80 breweries, over 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, live music, going to be a great time. Launch party tonight from 7 to 10, silent auction at 8 o'clock as well. 713-780-3776, BMackers filling in for Blankers today. Texter on the text line, where else? Aaron in Mid-County, J-Bone, the lineup is out. Where's my what's wrong with the Spottas lineup discussion? My bad. We posted it on Twitter at Jeremy Branham. But same lineup today, B-Mackers. Altuve, Paredes, Jordan, Walker, Yiner, Pena, Smith, Rogers, Myers. I don't have any problem with it. Now, I am a little surprised. Don't have a problem with it. Am a little surprised that this is back-to-back games with Rogers at second and no Mauricio Dubon.
Yeah, especially since Joe Espada made a point to mention when Brendan Rogers got the start yesterday on opening day that, well, just because he got the start today doesn't mean he's our starting second baseman. But, I mean, if once is a coincidence, two times is a trend or whatever the saying is, I mean, two times in a row to start the season, kind of seems like Brendan Rogers is the starting second baseman.
It is also kind of weird because they moved Altuve to left before they had Brendan Rodgers, and the whole idea was because we want our infield defense to be good. So it's like they did that with Dubon in mind, and then Brendan Rodgers is like, oh, Altuve's moving to left? Call up Scott Boras, give me a minor league deal there, and then he like seemingly wins the job? So it's kind of weird that they move Altuve to left, pencil Dubon is their second baseman, and then you get a late camp invite. I mean, not that late. He was pretty early in camp, but not a guy that was necessarily in your plans. And it seemed like it was more Brendan Rodgers' decision than the Astros' decision. And then he's starting over Dubon. Like, it's just kind of weird. That there's anything wrong with it. It's just kind of weird, you know, how it all added up.
Yeah, and Rodgers is not a bad defensive player. So, I mean, obviously the idea of let's get Altuve out of second base so we can put a better defender there would have been – I mean, I would say better with Dubon. Like, I would regard him as the better defensive second baseman, but Brendan Rodgers isn't a bad one. So.
But the brainchild existed before Brendan Rodgers was even a thought.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the move has got to be – and we've had conversations about, and we'll see how this plays out over the season, but I'm sure this move was made, obviously – If you view their defense as semi-equal, and we can have that discussion, you know, who is above who, I think Rodgers has profiled as a better hitter than Dubon, although, as we've discussed, that offensive production really only came at Coors Field. So we'll have to see how he hits, you know, now as an Astro, obviously playing what, at most three games at Coors Field? So that'll be a question to answer over the course of the season. But I kind of get maybe give Rodgers a shot at the beginning of the year, see if he can hit, because we know DeBon's a slightly below average hitter. His OPS plus has been a guy that's, you know, high 80s and low 90s. So we know what kind of know what he is. But Rodgers possibly could be a little bit better as an offensive player.
Texter says that Rodgers Gold Glove in 2022. Yeah, he did. DeBon won it in 2023, and Rodgers, since winning a Gold Glove, has been a negative defensive WAR player. I don't think that Rodgers is a bad defender. I would have DeBon higher. I think Rodgers is good. I would have DeBon higher. It's just funny to me, and I'm not saying that I want DeBon to play second. I'm not saying that. Let's not get it twisted here. It's just funny and a bit ironic that they made the decision for Altuve to play left field, and like, oh, because DuBon's going to give us great defense, and then DuBon doesn't start the first two games of the year. It's just funny.
I forget who the Mets starter is tonight, but is there a split
Neagle
reason why?
Okay. Well, I mean, they're both righties, right? I mean, Brendan Rodgers, does he have reverse splits over his career? I don't think that he does.
I didn't know who the Mets starter was tonight. I knew Holmes was the starter, obviously, yesterday. But I wasn't sure if maybe, like, yesterday was just, like, the one-off, like, a spot of set. And then today, as coincidence have, maybe there was a split reason. But, yeah, I'm kind of grasping at straws here. I'm trying to find a reason why that would be the case.
They both hit lefties better over the course of their career. Now, maybe one guy's better against certain types of pitchers, and then the other guy's better against other types of pitchers, which are harder to identify as, like, observers. So maybe there is something like that going on, but it's just a little funny. Maybe more important to have DuBon as a bench guy with his versatility. Yeah, I don't really have a disagreement there, Texter. Now, I wouldn't be like, hey, DuBon, you be the permanent utility guy if he's better than Rodgers. Like, if DuBon is better than Rodgers, I want him to start, not be the utility guy. Now, it'd be great if Rodgers is better and then DuBon could be the utility guy. But play your best nine. Don't play DuBon as the best 10th guy because he's better suited for that. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me. And I'm not making that claim. I'm just saying play the guy who's better.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, I do agree with the texter that DeBon's best role is a super utility, because if as a guy whose OPS plus is, you know, high 80s, low 90s, his bat in the lineup every day is not a plus for your lineup. But if DeBon was better than Rodgers, why would you intentionally keep your better player out of the lineup? That doesn't make any sense.
Texter says, come on, DuBon won it as a utility guy. He did win it as a utility guy, but he was a finalist at second base as well. And DuBon's defensive metrics in the last 2 years are superior than Brendan Rodgers. So, like, just because he won a Gold Glove in 2022 doesn't mean he's a better defender than Mauricio DuBon, because he won the Gold Glove as a utility guy in 2023. Like, it's not the end-all, be-all. Derek Jeter won multiple Gold Gloves and was a terrible defender. Jose Altuve won a Gold Glove in the past and has been moved to left field because his defense is so bad at second base now. So, like, Gold Gloves in the past don't mean you're a better defender in the 2025 season. And we're probably splitting hairs here. We're probably, like, you know, we're arguing the margins here. Is Rodgers a good defender? Is DuBon a good defender? The answer is yes on both of them. Which one's marginally better defensively than the other? I would argue that it's DuBon, but that's really not the point of what I'm saying. The point of what I'm saying is they moved Altuve to left to improve their infield defense, and DuBon was the guy that they had penciled in there, and then he's been he's had the job stolen from him by Brendan Rodgers, which is fine. If he's a better player, that's totally fine. Which, speaking of second base, how long is the leash at second base for either one of these guys?
I think this came up even when Joel was on the show, maybe it was early this week, or I guess Monday was the only day Joel was on, or maybe it was last week. But I think it's possible that we could look at the Astros lineup, and we haven't seen DeZinzo hit yet, but we could look at this Astros lineup and come to the conclusion that their best offensive nine includes DeZinzo in the everyday lineup, which would then necessitate Jose Altuve moving back to second. So I kind of think that's the answer. Like, if the offense is doing fine, then there's no reason to make the move. But if Brendan Rodgers is a terrible player outside of Coors Field, like his numbers have shown, if DuBon is still the, you know, below average offensive player, as his numbers have shown over the last few years, while DeZinzo in his spot starts and his backup duty is hitting well, I think that's when the leash gets kicked in, and maybe DeZinzo and Cam Smith are your corner outfielders, and Jose Altuve gets moved back to second base. Not every day, because I still wouldn't want him in the field when Fromber's on the mound, and probably not Hunter Brown either. But I think it's the question really is, do Rodgers and Dubon hit? So I think they give Rodgers and Dubon probably. I don't think they rush it, but I would say sometime in June if they'll look at it, and if neither guy is hitting, they might decide to make Altuve instead of maybe 80% left field. Maybe he's only 60% left field.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I think simply said, the combination of Dubon and Rodgers need to offensively keep their head above water and not to be passed up by DeZinzo or Chaz. If Dubon and Rodgers are close offensively to what you're getting or think you'll get from Chaz and DeZinzo, then I think that leash is long. But if you're getting no production at second base offensively, and like DeZinzo or Chaz is like forcing the Astros' hand to place them in the lineup daily, then that's when you could see that change. And I do think it'll be several months. I don't think it would change. I don't think that philosophy would change until the summer.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's too quick, especially if you're going to be splitting time, and which would obviously decrease the sample size for both guys if they're not getting everyday playing time. If I don't know what the split between the two of them will be, but I think because of that, you're at minimum talking sometime in June, and that could be something that plays out to the All-Star break as well.
Texter, does your defensive position and being a starter affect where you hit?
Wait, say that again?
Does your defensive position and being a starter affect where you hit? No. No, maybe, I mean, some players, maybe it affects how they hit, although I would argue that those people are kind of weak-minded.
Soft, yeah.
But, no, your defensive position and being a starter affect where you hit? No.
No,
unless,
yeah,
I mean, maybe I don't understand the text.
You know, I don't get the correlation.
Now, if you hit it at an offensive ballpark and you can't hit anywhere else, kind of like Rodgers at Coors or some people at Fenway when they leave,
okay.
I don't think that's what he's saying, but it makes more sense if he's saying it that way.
Yeah,
I'm trying to dig him out of
a
hole.
I'm a little confused.
Does your defensive position and being a starter affect where you hit? No. The answer to that is no. No. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Phone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Thanks again to Wild West Brewfest for having the station out today. Remember to get your tickets, wildwestbrewfest.com. You can also pre-purchase drink tickets while you're there. Over 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, live music. It's going to be a great time to be had for all. Launch party tonight, 7 to 10, silent auction at 8. You're going to have to outbid Brian, though, so good luck there. Good luck winning some auction items over Brian. Might be tough. Car wrecks of the day, 713-780-3776. Real quick, the texter sent us a follow-up on that defensive position lineup thing. I was just wondering if your position affects where you hit in the lineup. Can you be a non-starter and hit at the top of the lineup? Unless he's a DH, no. No, if you're on the bench, you're not in the lineup.
Yeah, it's still.
But if you're a DH,
really
you can bat first. Yeah, if you DH, you can bat leadoff. If you're not in the starting nine, though, you have to pinch hit usually later in the game.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe we have a new guy to baseball, Brian. Don't be so insulting to the guy.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm trying not to be judgmental, but the clarification didn't help.
I mean, you were mad at Jake Myers for hitting a ground ball to a drawn back infield whenever he drove in a run. So, I think this text is better
than
that.
Hit when there's bases, when there's runners on in scoring positions. All
what
I'm
is
saying.
Your car wreck of the day?
I've got a couple nominees. First one, I don't know if you saw this, but baseball is a sport known for having the weird injuries. Usually it's in spring training, but this one made it into opening day of the regular season. But Pirates second baseman Nick Gonzalez hit a home run yesterday. Good news,
nice.
You know, way to start off the season. Bad news, he fractured his ankle during his home run trot and is now going on the 10-day injured list.
How? So, how did this happen?
I haven't seen the video yet. I'm just reading the story. But, yeah, apparently as he was going around first base, he started limping, and they looked at it after the game or after he got removed, I guess. And it turns out he fractured his ankle somehow during his home run trot. So Nick Gonzalez will be out for at least, well, actually more than 10 days. But he's on the 10-day injured list there for the Pirates. My other nominee And obviously, you've had to have seen this news by now, but the Grizzlies shocked, I think, pretty much everybody, since considering they're right there in the thick of things for the playoffs, probably be a top six seed, I would assume, and they went ahead and fired their head coach, what, like 8-9 games before the regular season ends and the playoff begins, go ahead and giving the ouster there to Taylor Jenkins. So a weird move there from the Grizzlies. I'm sure there's more behind this. I don't know if there's a disagreement with management or with the players or something off the court happened that might have got him into some trouble, but a weird move there by the Grizzlies to fire Taylor Jenkins like two, three weeks before the playoffs start.
2 weeks. Fifth place in the West, yeah. 2 weeks left in the season. You fire your head coach who's widely acclaimed, like the league thinks highly of him, and they also got rid of two assistants. Noah LaRoche,
so weird,
and Patrick St. Andrews have also been released of their duties alongside Taylor Jenkins. Yeah, something had to have happened here because you're not firing
something
a head
off
coach
the court.
With 2 weeks left.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
really
there's got
to
really
be like a off the court thing. I mean, not to bring Ime into this, but something like that has to be behind this more because it can't be basketball.
Texture says, you don't forget you thought Lake Michigan was an ocean. Don't forget where you came from, Brian. Stop insulting our textures. But I mean, you don't fire two assistants, though, if it's an Ime situation.
You're right. You're right. I'm just trying to make... Oh, wow. That would be... Yeah.
I want to nominate Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith, he did this earlier today. Here's Stephen A.
Listen, it's the NCAA tournament, so anything can happen in a one-game scenario. So, of course, he'll have a chance. And, of course, he'll have his teams in the tournament. Of course, he's going to be able to recruit better than anybody ever has there outside of Mr. 40 Minutes of Hell himself, the late, great Nolan Richardson, God rest his soul. But in the same breath, if anybody can compete with that and bring a national program back to Arkansas, it is John Calipari. I think he's already done it.
Nolan Richardson's alive, and he is well. Stephen A. Smith just buried Nolan Richardson.
God rest his soul.
Still with us. Still with us. He said, rest in peace, God rest his soul. And Stephen A. would come back on later in the show and be like, of course I knew he was alive. I don't know why I said that. You said two things that like confirmed you thought he was dead, man.
Yeah, he thought he was dead. I mean, this is – I wish I had all the – I'm sure someone's got a supercut of all these moments. But Stephen A. has had those moments where he's talking up NFL games and talking about players who have been traded away – or not on the team anymore. So, yeah, I don't think he actually knew Nolan Richardson was alive.
Kyemi Fairbairn hit Kay Adams with a golf ball. He gets nominated for Car Wreck of the Day. Some text nominees, Astros trading Willier Abreu for a rental of Vasquez. Yeah, that trade didn't look good today. Car Wreck of the Day, LeBron, Stephen A. Skit, Calipari losing to Tech. Car Wreck of the Day, Apple TV, not allowing me seven. Oh, he says allowing him a seven-day access. Take the W. I don't know how that's a car wreck then. And then last text, I nominate you two talking over each other for half the show. I blame Brian for that. All right, what's winning here, Brian?
I think Nick Gonzalez fracturing his ankle
bad.
During a home run try.
Memphis firing Jenkins, though.
I know, they're both bad. They're both bad. I'm fine
Let's
with
Let's go co-car wrecks. Co-car wrecks, y'all okay. Win. Congratulations. Does it for us. Thanks, Sean, doing double duty. He's Brian, I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you next week. On ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Have a great weekend, Houston.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.